Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels, episode number 153, playoff episode number 11. It's Monday, October 12th. Derek Van Riper, Britt Girola, Eno Saris, all here with you as we kick off another great week of playoff baseball. We're coming off a great weekend of playoff baseball. We had game five, of course, between the Yankees and Rays. That was on Friday night, which feels like a lifetime ago. We already had game one of the ALCS, which, frankly, I think was a pretty good follow-up. I mean, an elimination game is kind of its own beast. It's hard to match the intensity of a game like the one we saw on Friday night. But for an opening game of an LCS, I kind of feel like we got what we deserved in the first game of the Astros-Rays series.
I mean, no one deserved the Houston Astros in the ALCS, but
I can think of one person.
Especially not the Astros.
I mean, Derek, that no issue here is everyone now changing to a different podcast. Like, I can't listen to these Astros sympathizers.
No. Or these Astros haters is my joke.
That's true. No, you're right, though. If you like baseball and you have gotten used to the fact that the Houston Astros are still playing, it's great from a baseball standpoint. Well pitched, really clean game, really good game. Two talented teams. I know people are going to go on and on about how the Astros were under 500. Can we all kind of agree now that they're a good team, though? Like, their lineup is really good. Their starting pitching is very good. Yes, their bullpen is just so-so. Certainly, they have weaknesses. You can make the case that Kevin Cash might be a better manager in a big spot. We know about Dusty Baker and some of his issues in the postseason. But this is really going to be a fun series. I think both of these championship series are going to be excellent. A lot of talented teams. Nobody kind of snuck in here. I think we can kind of get rid of that narrative when it comes to Houston. It really just shows more than anything that 60 games isn't a true microcosm of what a team is capable of. And we are now seeing a lineup in Houston that's very well-seasoned, very used to the moment, and really benefiting from the fact that there are no hostile road crowds at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've been wondering here about the role of the crowds, and the fact it's been mostly chalk, and what that means. It is, I think, baseball's a bit weirder in the postseason without the crowds. So that has definitely been something. I feel like they've almost turned it up.
The noise?
The
yes.
Fake crowd.
Oh,
noise.
I totally agree. I was going to ask if you guys thought that too. Like, it felt like in the Yankees Rays game five, I was like, are people there?
Yeah, I was upstairs and like I was like, what's going on? Like, is that a big play? Like, wait, that's almost like a normal question to ask in the next room. So I feel like they've turned it up a little bit to try and counter what I'm feeling, which is like a regular season game without crowd noise is normal. A postseason game without crowd noise is depressing. So I think they've turned it up a little bit, but it is interesting to think about what the crowd effect would be for Rays Astros anyway. I guess the Rays would fill a postseason stadium, so they would get that boost. But I don't know. I want to ask DVR this. This is because from an analytical standpoint, you know, the Rays have like their lovers and their detractors. You know, like they do things really well, and other people say they're just really cheapos, and that's all they're doing. So there are people on the East Coast, I feel like that's why I want to ask DVR. Like, do you think this is already like one of those series where you root for the asteroid? If you're like not an Astros fan or a Tampa Bay fan, or you're just like, I hate both of these teams.
I don't think so. I think you have talent on both sides that's just fun to watch from a pure baseball perspective. Like, if you were frozen in ice for the last year or 100 years and you'd seen baseball before and you were just put in front of the TV to watch Astros Rays, and you didn't know the backstory, especially, you wouldn't be that mad about it. Like,
Fromber looked good.
Yeah.
Fromber pitched really well. The bullpen arms in Houston continue to surprise us. Blake Taylor didn't stay in the game long.
95,
even Paredes pitched. Yeah, like, the stuff looks good. Paredes continues to shine. Blake Snell didn't have his best stuff on the other side, but he still got through five innings, only allowed the one home run to Altuve. I think this is quality stuff. I think this is quality modern baseball. I do think you could make some arguments about the Rays being super cheap, and I think those are valid arguments, but they're also smart. Like, they are. Like, I know it's overused, but they're a well-run organization.
Right.
They do find talent. Mike Brasso, hit the home run in Game 5, right? An undrafted free agent found from the Horizon League.
Someone to root for, right?
He's a guy to root for. Randy Arozarena. We've talked about the Randy Arozarena experience. He's fun to root for. A guy they traded for who was not a hyped-up player when they dealt for him, but he's been great in the postseason. You look at this team.
People couldn't even tell if they traded for Jose Martinez or Randy Arozarena, right?
You really didn't know who they liked. Maybe they liked both.
That's totally a Tampa thing, right? Who did
and
they make this trade
in
for?
In their favor.
Oh, it must be Jose Martinez. And yeah, right. And then they release Jose Martinez or whatever. They like basically DFA'd him. Like, no, it was for Randy Arozarena all along.
Yeah, and I think Willy Adames has that sort of infectious energy, kind of like the way Lindor does. Like, when you watch Lindor around the diamond and on the field, right, he has that energy that kind of brings everybody up. G-Man Choi has that too. Like,
yeah,
the Rays are a fun team. Like, they are visually a fun team to watch and to get behind. So I think even a neutral observer can get on board with them, because they're a bit like San Diego. We've said it before. They don't have a Tatis level star in that group of position players, but they do have that sort of laid back. And I mean, we saw the dance off after Game 5, right? Like, they're becoming a team that people who are not familiar with are starting to fall in love with.
I agree. And isn't their cheapness also a function of that market and that stadium?
I mean, we see the media,
right? Like,
numbers,
you're never
like we right. have the CMS. We see the numbers. Like, we know how tough that market is, and like, I also think there's something going on in Tampa that's going on in like Arizona and Colorado, which is that these places didn't have a history of baseball. You weren't handed down your fandom for the D-backs from your grandfather. You know, you didn't learn to love the Rockies because your whole family has been going to Rockies games for, 50 years or whatever. So Tampa is the same thing, where like, you have, the joke is that you have a ton of Yankees fans when the Rays come to town, when the Yankees come to town, that's when you get the sellouts. So one thing that is interesting from when you combine these things, the size of the market, the media, the way we write, the way that everybody writes, the way that people tackle this, the way that the team is run, is that you don't get the same sense of their personalities through the season, right? Like, you don't know, like, G-Man Choi maybe bubbles to the top because he's like a classic guy that like is very Twitter friendly. But like, other than fantasy heads, like Randy Arozarena was probably a total new guy to them. Diego Castillo, who the heck is this? But the fun thing about the playoffs is now we get the full coverage. Now we get the deep coverage. Now we get the backstories. Now, and what we're, with Willy Adames in particular, not a great fantasy player, not a great offensive player, but a really good defensive player. And the backstory is great. He is the heart of this team. I didn't really know this, but him and Manny Margot and Randy Arozarena are this like really tight threesome. And if you just start to watch Willy Adames, the way he's joking in the dugout, the way he talks to people, the way that he interacts with people, you realize he might be the heart of this team. And that's kind of significant. So then you're like, Willy is the heart, Randy is the star, I guess, at least right now. G-Man is the fun time, I don't know, just him like swinging right-handed and getting hit in the junk. Like, I don't know. He's just funny.
I do want to say too, while we're like, kind of poo-pooing the Tampa Bay market, they do support the Lightning, and they haven't, they've been good, but I didn't realize it had been this long since they advanced out of the first real round of the playoffs. Did you guys?
A little bit like the A's, right? A's East.
I didn't realize that it had been since 2008, like that B.J. Upton, Evan Longoria team that kind of came out. And I was there that year, and they did sell out. They tarped the upper deck, the upper deck at Tropicana Field. But people still came out. It was I mean, it's very loud in that dome. I don't know if you guys have been there, but because it's a dome, it gets, like, deafening. So I think the noise would be a little bit of a factor.
And it's all that cement, too,
catwalks,
right?
The catwalks, all this crazy stuff.
Like, the A's playoff games are loud because it's just cement.
So I do think even though Tampa gets, like, oh, no one would come to the games, ha-ha, they're used to no crowds, like those jokes.
Not in the postseason.
They would come. They would fill it up. The Astros would still be booed at Tropicana Field. And those boos would have nowhere to release because of all the crazy catwalks and the way that stadium's all set up. It would feel louder, even if it wasn't quite as loud as a Yankee Stadium or some of these other open-air parks, just because of the way it's constructed. But I personally, I don't know about you guys. Well, I do know about you guys because you both picked the Rays to lose to the Yankees on Friday.
You got
some absolute genius on this podcast.
At least we all said it was tight, right?
Yeah, we had the game script about
low scoring.
Hey, you know what? I almost called the Arozarena home run that was pulled back by Brett Gardner, and I was one bopper off on the Yankee home run the second time through the order.
So I was pretty close.
I just had the team wrong. I've had the teams wrong pretty much the entire postseason so far. But hey.
So I'd like to know who your jinx in this round, DVR.
I was just thinking about that. If I'm making a prediction on this series, I think the Astros are better than the offense we saw over the 60-game regular season because they're healthier now than they were then, right? They were kind of a league-average offense in terms of WRC+. They're not a league-average offense, and they don't take league-average at-bats, and we saw that against Blake Snell in Game 1. There was a stat on the screen.
They don't strike out.
They don't strike out, and I think they took Blake Snell to 6 full counts in his final 2 innings, like 7 in total over 5, which they made him work. He went over 100 pitches just to get 15 outs. That's going to be a problem. That's going to create a little more strain on the starters. It's going to push some of those relievers. I think if you start getting those relievers up past, you know, 15 to 20 pitches especially, that's when you can grind it out and come up with a big hit against some of those guys. So I love the way the Astros match up with pretty much anybody. They take so many good at-bats. So I think I'm actually taking the Astros. They dropped Game 1.
No,
I think it goes 7.
On. They didn't even use Nick Anderson tonight.
I know.
They used their B bullpen.
You know, the thing is,
they used their B bullpen and won.
Anderson gave up that home run in Game 5, and he had allowed 6 hard-hit balls. He pitched 2 2/3 innings. It was overall, it was a good performance through 32 pitches. But he got hit hard a bunch of times. I was a little surprised we didn't see him tonight.
Curtis for a full inning.
This is very nitpicky over here.
Yeah. I'm saying this game went about as well as you could go for the Astros, and they lost.
Agreed. And they were very aggressive on the base pass, which they're going to have to do because you're going to have to rattle Tampa Bay's pitching, I think, the only way you can. And their bullpen does have some inexperience in it. Maybe you get a ball thrown away or two. Maybe you get a case where you get those guys, it looks like, you know, trying to get in their heads maybe a little bit. I think it's Tampa Bay in 6. I think Houston wins tomorrow. I think they got McCullers going tomorrow. He's been terrific. I think they get one tomorrow. I don't think by any means is this a lopsided series. I think Tampa Bay wins this in 6.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'm going with Tampa. Of course, that's a kiss of death. I've been wrong like almost every time. But, you know, batter strikeout rate has predicted every series in this postseason. It's more important in the postseason than it is in the regular season. And yet, the team that it has not predicted this postseason is the Rays. And I think we saw tonight. You saw Framber Valdez, he struck out the side in the first inning, right? You saw him pitch really well. You saw him get a bunch of strikeouts, 8 strikeouts in 6 innings. And yet, they got that homer. And that's what this offense is. It's like we're all going to swing, homer. And I feel like they didn't even get as lucky as they could have. They could have had 2 or 3 homers tonight if, you know, Valdez had just been a touch worse. And Snell, as much as you think that he got lucky, and I hear that. I mean, he didn't really dominate this game. And to get out of there with one inning, with one run was pretty impressive for Snell. It wasn't lucky on balls in play. He had one line out that had a 700 batting average. And then otherwise, he had you know, a double play that was a 790 off of Kyle Tucker. Maybe the outs were situated correctly, and maybe he just got out of things just in time. But in terms of balls in play, it wasn't like they were hitting rockets everywhere. I think he just had mediocre command and got the strikes when he needed them. So if that's going to be their second best pitcher out of three, I think they're going to win some games. And, you know, I'm always wrong. It's fine. You can just use me and bet against me.
One of you
has to be right. Yeah, we both can't be wrong. We're on opposite sides. I mean, unless the asteroid thing happens, in which case it's been a lot of fun doing the pod. And
yeah, right.
Everybody enjoyed their time on
Earth.
Love
you guys.
One last review before you go.
Yeah, hit the 5 stars before the asteroid gets here, if you don't mind. I just want us to go out on top. That's the important thing. Hats off to Diego Castillo, though. He pitched really well again tonight. He was the one that finished off the game 5. The only hard hit ball, I think, was the one that ended the game on Friday night. It almost went through the glove of Joey Wendell. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, man.
That liner at the end of the game almost broke Wendell's glove. I don't think I've seen that happen in a long time. So that would have been high drama if that would have put a runner on base. But, I mean, we're not going to relive Yankees Rays, but the Mike Brasso versus Aroldis Chapman at bat, legitimately one of the best postseason at bats of all time, because he went down 0-2. Chapman missed with a slider outside that, if he's even a little closer, it might have been close enough to get that call. And that changes everything. And the thing about it, too, Pedro Martinez did a good job, I thought, breaking this down on the postgame show. Chapman was up. He was down. He was outside. He was inside. He was all over trying to.
He does not have good command, though. I mean he was missing some spots.
He was missing
spots.
He just
had 100.
But he was trying. He was trying to attack Brasso in a logical sort of way.
Did you hear what Brasso said afterwards? That was pretty interesting. He said, I was just trying to see it down. Huh. So that's pretty interesting because Chapman was throwing some back foot sliders, right? I mean, that's his deal. Inside fastballs, back foot sliders, and then some outside fastball sometimes, right? And that's his deal. So Brasso would have been struck out if that had been a slider.
Good point.
Fair.
I mean, that's how fine the line is between, a great story about, you know, Brasso standing at the plate being the totally typical Ray, you know, standing up against Aroldis Chapman, the high-dollar, 100-mile-an-hour closer, fire-breathing dude, you know. I mean, that was Ray's Yankees in a nutshell. And he could have just struck out if it had been a slider instead of a fastball.
Oh, you're right. It's a good point. I mean, that was an epic game, though. I mean, could you have asked for anything better, right, coming down to the wire? 5-game series, 2 teams that don't like each other, this great rivalry. Mm-hmm. It was just, and we talked about this, I feel like, on the podcast, like with Chapman, is when he is really well rested, like I think he was for game 4, totally lights out. When he doesn't have
you saw that in the Indian series.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
Some of the command goes a little bit, and he's throwing 100, and obviously you need to be able to command that. And the Rays, you know, kind of did a good job of really, you know, being selective and bearing down there. And the first half of that game was like, it seemed like, I know it wasn't a high scoring game. It was never lopsided, but it seemed like, man, the Yankees are just going to win this game. That was kind of the sense I had. I don't know about you guys. It kind of seemed like, oh, the Rays are just going to come up short here. They should have finished them in 4. And then it just, that one at bat, the whole thing just flips. The whole script flips. Judge, Stanton, they're all going home. The Rays are celebrating to New York, New York. I mean, which I thought was petty and beautiful at the same time. And now we are
It's funny. I think after the game, was it Fairbanks was like, I hate that song. It's so sad.
It is sad. And I was in New York in 2009, and if I have to hear that Empire State of Mind song one more time, that postseason was totally out of control. The Yankees obviously won the World Series. Every time they won a playoff game, it was Empire State of Mind.
Yeah, God. But way cooler was, did you guys see the dance battle?
The dance battle was awesome.
Dance battle was awesome.
I make a move to replace all these fake plastic champagne and Budweiser, also like cheapest beer and cheapest champagne that you can put together because you're going to spray it all over each other with totally manufactured excitement on the behalf of most people involved and us media just trying to get a quote before we get doused by somebody. Can we replace that by dance battles?
Totally.
Holy crap. Brett Phillips, you know, it's funny. I did text somebody in the Rays organization and said, literally, Brett Phillips, ?
Agreed. Also, you want to talk about marketing endearing these guys. Like, let's watch a dance-off, right? Like, fans are going to relate to that more than some random dude with Bud Light, like, flipping it in the corner. Like, come on.
But the response to my text was, we like his entire package of skills. I did not know that meant a dancer extraordinaire. Dude, he won round one, and in round two, he stepped toe-to-toe to Randy Arozarena. These guys were doing some amazing dance moves, really good stuff. I mean, a little bit of popping and locking, definitely some break dancing, some acrobatic. They both had flips. Both had a good sense of the beat, I think, and they were doing it. I mean, if you haven't seen that video, you got to see it. It's up there with like the Dreams Cranberry video, which I guess Derek Van Riper didn't even know about.
We talked about literally that song on this pod last week. I didn't know where it came from. I saw the commercial for it.
Why is it Eno talking about Fleetwood Mac?
I didn't know where that came from. Then I saw Mick Fleetwood on the commercial.
I thought I was the old dude.
He's got some illegal commercial free feed from Korea or something.
Yeah.
I will not divulge where I'm getting the feeds
TV,
from.
Dude.
How are you not suffering through these same commercials?
Yeah. I can't reveal my secrets, and I don't want to jeopardize myself legally by revealing them to you. So
anyway, one thing I did notice about Rhett Phillips is he's the third fastest guy on the team, and I think that they put him in as a pinch runner. And so I think they're like, he could even be DFA'd next year. I think like that was almost like a Terrence Gore situation. They were like, who's a fast dude who can be our fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder, who bats from the left side?
I believe he's a lefty. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they wanted one more lefty.
Yeah. Didn't that used to be like the big September call up thing? Like teams that were good, like, hey, let's get one guy who could just run. He's going to make the team.
It is a thing.
And he's just going to run.
Terrence Gore is on the Dodgers roster.
That's it. That's all we need. One thing. Can you kick a field goal? Cool. You're on the football team.
It's all about Dave Roberts, dude. Dave Roberts started this all.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Last thing that I saw from the Game 5 that I do think is worth mentioning here is from Mike Petriello on Twitter. He put this out there after the game. The average fastball in that game Friday, 97.2, which is just insane. It was the second hardest fastball game on record by 0.1 miles per hour. And it was the hardest fastball game ever if you include the cutters, which I think we should. So if you felt like you were just watching paint and velocity over and over, that's because you were. It was incredible from a pitching perspective.
I'll push back a little bit on paint. Tyler Glasnow is like the sixth worst guy by Command Plus, and I had an argument with someone who called himself a scout Garrett Cole's.
Someone who called himself a scout.
Sorry, they're probably listening. Sorry, dude, maybe you are a scout, I don't know. I've just learned that just putting scout on your Twitter bio does not make you a scout. I learned that the hard way, actually.
Same thing with injury specialist.
Yes, exactly. Or pain guy. Although maybe it is painful to follow him. The thing about Garrett Cole was just, you know, how good his command actually is. I think we saw him miss enough. I mean, he walked the first three guys to walk the bases loaded. But command is interesting because Framber Valdez, I think, like tiptoed tonight on command. Like, he did so well in command. And I think we saw from Blake Snell was not good command. Like, he had pretty good stuff, but he did not have good command. And so they both got to about the same result, kind of, by runs. But in terms of what you would expect if you threw those two guys, I think you would expect Framber Valdez to have better games going forward than Blake Snell.
One more quick Rays note, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but are these new shirts that the Rays are sporting with horses on the front that say 98 on them, which is a ode, of course, to Kevin Cash saying he's got a staple of guys who throw 98. Diego Castillo in his Zoom today, there's a screenshot or a bunch of them on Twitter. He's wearing this shirt. It's got just a horse and 98 inside. This is excellent. Who came up with it? Excellent. Excellent. Their hats tonight were terrible.
I'm not as enthused. PR.
The shirts were PR. Good. The hats were terrible. I don't know how you guys felt about those.
I didn't like the hats.
I like
either.
Horses. I like horses. Here's a little known fact about Eoceras. I've been sharing these, as you might have noticed.
Sprinkling them in.
Last time was the chickens. Here's a little known fact from Eoceras. I went to equestrian camp twice as a young man.
Boy, is that nerdy.
Yeah, it is.
At what point are you going to write a book about your childhood?
Oh, probably my first book. Nobody wants my baseball book.
It's like Kramer brought to life.
He's young Eno holding a chicken sitting on a horse.
He's also got a parlay. He's got Iowa State at home against Mizzou, and he's got...
His dad's a bookie, don't forget.
West Virginia at home against North Carolina, so...
I think my mom just wanted to get me out of her circumstances. So she thought if I take him to tennis lessons and if I take him to equestrian, he'll just be friends with rich people. And
he's got to be good at something. He ends up being a sports writer.
I'm sorry. It didn't work. It didn't work. I don't know anybody from my equestrian or tennis classes.
He's not good at horses. He's not good at tennis. He can't fight chickens.
I'm okay at tennis. Oh, I can take a chicken on. Don't you start.
Well, I think we should talk about the NLCS since that gets underway later today.
That's an easy segue.
Yeah.
Curious to see what you do with that later.
Yeah. Not sure how that edit's going to come together, but here we are. Walker Buehler, Max Fried going in game one of that series. Not surprisingly, Clayton Kershaw, Ian Anderson going in game two. It's almost like these teams have a pattern how they like to use their starters, but... beyond that, we don't really know what the Dodgers are going to do because they messed around in the last series with Dustin May. I would hope they would just let him go in game three. In a seven-game series, you can't really cut everybody short.
But they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, they haven't done it yet. So maybe it's Urias, maybe it's May. Maybe it all depends on how Buehler and Kershaw fare, right? The game situation in game one or game two could dictate using one of those guys sooner than game three. So... I think you can only look at the first 2 days of the series and analyze these matchups, but the more I've thought about this series, I think it's just going to come down to how well the Braves' young starters hold up and how effectively Brian Snitker manages the bullpen. If he can have sort of that magic touch, pull guys out just at the right time, go to that pen, get the matchups just right. The pen's good enough, but the Braves are clear underdogs here. So as you guys have looked at this matchup, is there anything else that's really caught your eye that might give the Dodgers a significant advantage over Atlanta? Because I think offensively, the Braves can slug with the Dodgers. That's a lineup that can do plenty of damage.
Short of putting Kenley Jansen in your little ice machine and sending him back 5 years? No, I don't think so. My biggest issue, and I've heard this all day, like the Dodgers are supposed to be the underdog, right? I think it's 2-1. I mean, the Braves are supposed to be underdog. It's 2-1. Braves fans are all upset. They think they can hang with the Dodgers. And I agree with them. I think they can hang with the Dodgers. And the primary reason why is when you get to those later innings and the Braves are locked down, you have the Dodgers and who is pitching the ninth inning. We still don't really know what their ninth inning situation is, which would be okay if they were facing like the Rays or a weaker hitting lineup. But the Braves lineup is capable of putting up a crooked number. If you don't have those last few outs on lockdown, the Braves, no game is going to be out of reach for them. So I don't, you know, I took your question and totally flipped it, DVR, but I just don't think the Dodgers have quite as many advantages in this as people think. If they had pitched great last series, sure. But Kenley Jansen is what right now? On ice? Hanging out? I'm not really sure. Are they pitching him at all in blowouts? I don't think you can
he's
even...
He's up three, down three guy. Like, that's what he is right now. Like, he's
up,
not
up
close
three,
and late.
Though? Up three? I don't think he's a great idea with the Braves offense. Does anyone... You know? I don't know.
Up three, bottom of the order, sixth inning. Sure. That's about it. I mean, that's about as comfortable as you can get, though.
That's the most niche, like, spot for him. to me, I just don't know what you do.
No, I think it's right for us to be talking about games three and four, because I think that if you were like doing percentage who's going to win those games, the Dodgers are at like 60%. You'd almost never do that for a single game. You know, you're taught that's like a huge advantage. That's like, I think the Dodgers against Kyle Wright and TBD are going to blow the door down. I'll take Walker Buehler over Max Fried. Maybe it's close enough where the bullpen can matter, and I would take, I think, the Braves' bullpen over the Dodgers' bullpen. But if Walker Buehler does outpitch Max Fried, or even if the Braves win Game 1, I think Game 2 is slightly more Dodger-friendly, and then Games 3 and 4 are very Dodger-friendly. So I could see the Braves winning Game 1, and then the Dodgers winning like 3 in a row, and it's still going to like 7. But I'm going to take the Dodgers based on depth of lineup. And this is the way I think we should maybe think about this in the future. I'm not sure about this because different pitchers can pitch different lengths. But what if you just slotted up the best pitcher with the best pitcher and the second best pitcher with the second best pitcher, right? And you just did that all the way down. I think the Dodgers would actually, you'd prefer the Dodger pitcher for pretty long.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Right?
Yes.
I think you might go to like 7 or 8 or 9. So if you're talking about like the Braves bullpen being better, yeah, sure. They're like 9th through 11th pitchers are way better.
Right.
But we learned from the Nationals that doesn't always matter. That basically in the playoffs, you're going to only, it's like in basketball, you might play 9 guys during the season. In the playoffs, you play 6.
But who are your 2 lockdown Dodger guys in the 8th and 9th? What people miss is the Nationals had 2 really good relievers that they went to. They had
so
John
Doolittle.
So you had to
be betting on like Gratterall and Kelly or something.
Right, or I guess like maybe Trinan would be a guy.
Yeah, okay. But both of those guys are sinker guys.
Right, like if you're throwing Joe Kelly in the 9th inning in a tight game, like, ooh, who is the advantage? It's advantage Atlanta. I agree with you, the starters are better. And I do think the Dodgers win this in 7, but I could very easily see Atlanta winning because I don't know if the starters are going to matter. We see starters now, they go 5 innings and everyone's like, what a great start by so-and-so. Really? They went 5, they went half the game. What do you do in the other half of the game? I think the no off days is real. It's changed.
Yeah, Gonsolin pitches 3 times.
Right, it just changes the whole complexion of the series, and I think it's going to place a little more emphasis on the starters going deep and the bullpens, and I don't know.
How about this? What if you make May a reliever, and he's your closer, basically?
I would make him like my 2-inning reliever, like my bridge to,
so
I don't
May,
know.
So May, Gratterall, so that's the thing. May, Gratterall, Trinan.
Yeah, in some order.
Or Gratterall, May, Trinan, or something, you know, those 3.
Those are your primary 3 relievers, and you can go 5 or 6 outs with any of them when you need to, right? Like, you could at least pull that once in a while.
Right, if he's not your Game 3 opener, I would hope they learn from that disaster.
Right. I think Gonsolin becomes, like, more, like, move-around 3-inning guy, and May becomes closer to 2-inning guy, which means that maybe that 3rd and 4th game advantage are overstated, because now they've used May and Gonsolin in these bullpen type roles. Right. Ah, yeah. I mean, it's always hard to predict these things, and it'll be decided by Mike Brousseau somehow.
Totally.
I don't know who the Mike Brousseau is.
I was gonna say who's the unheralded player who's gonna decide this series, and
is Charlie Culberson still on that team?
If Edwin Rios were.
Ah,
we're a
we
part
bet
of
on him. I think we love Edwin Rios.
Statcast darling Edwin Rios.
You know what is interesting too, though, that no one's talking about is the Braves pitching was ridiculous right at the first 2 rounds because of their opponents. Like, how is like Max Fried and Anderson and some of these guys going to respond to actually like getting hit and facing a real lineup?
And long at bats.
Yeah,
and,
like grinders, you know?
I think so. Although, here's another thing. The Dodgers have not seen Ian Anderson, right? Like, ever.
Right.
Right. Well, yeah, the Astros and Rays hadn't played till this year. I mean, this whole year is...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
I guess I could see the Braves sticking it out. I'm going to pick the Dodgers, but I could see how the Braves do it.
Well, one of us is going to have to be right here. No, I'm just kidding. I'm also going to take the Dodgers. I'll take the Dodgers in six. So, well, if the Braves pull it off, it's really a magic touch situation where Eno and I just can't get things right at all. What do you think, Britt?
Break the tie.
Oh, I'm going to go Dodgers in seven, though I badly want to pick Braves because, again, I saw this last year. It was like, there's no way the Dodgers can lose. And then their bullpen sucked and they lost. Like, I've seen this movie before, and I'm going to pick a different ending, and I'm going to be really mad if the Braves end up pulling this out. I do think it goes to seven. Sweeps are no fun. You know, then we have off days, and then all we have to do is talk about Eno's chickens for half an hour on this podcast. So I hope it goes seven. I'm going to go with the Dodgers. I think, God, can Dave Roberts win? I kind of feel bad for him at this point in time. He's a nice guy. He's got these stacked teams, and his legacy is going to be that he never won, right? That's going to be his legacy if he doesn't win.
I think it is fair to ask if the Dodgers don't give him enough autonomy. There is a lot of research, actually, in terms of workplace stuff. And I think that actually we've seen this at The Athletic. One of the reasons it's nice to work here is I think they give you autonomy. Like, if you have an idea and it's even beyond the scope of your normal editor, you can go find another editor. There are enterprise editors. There are like collaboration editors. There are all these different people that you can find to like put this thing together. One of my favorite things about working at Athletic has been like collaborations with Mark Carrig and Andrew Bagley and just like all the different, I have like projects always working with like, I have, oh, I, okay, Britt, I'll get on that one. I know we got something we're working on.
Come on, yeah.
But I love that. And I just wonder, maybe they don't give Roberts enough autonomy. I mean,
right.
Do you think Cash is calling more of this, or is Cash just reading off a piece of paper? But I do know for a fact that like before the game, there's something called like a sort of like a broadcaster's rights holders meeting where like the people who broadcast the game get like a sit down with the manager separate from the writers. And a lot of times they'll get a sense of who's pitching in what order so they can do some research and have something to say on air. And, you know, Roberts, I think, has been pretty much like, he even said, okay, so outside of this, if you want like outside corroboration, Roberts said one year the plan was to go to Kenley for two innings. Do you remember that?
Well, and the plan was to go for Clayton Kershaw no matter what in the seventh in that game five.
Right.
Yes.
So that you're, he's telling you, yes, that it wasn't his choice.
Yes.
He said the plan was.
Yes. I don't know if Kevin Cash has more autonomy.
Or they just make better decisions.
Yeah, or he's just better at blending the front office. He seems more of the modern manager, right? The front office.
Maybe.
But also the former player. He's a little like Rocco Baldelli-esque. It's kind of the same thing. I don't know. Maybe he's just better at that.
I was thinking about something Eno said about the Rays bullpen, I don't know, last week or so. It's not just that they're good and deep. It's that they all look different, right? I mean, like Ryan Thompson. How do you hit Ryan Thompson after seeing Blake Snell? Like, not only is it coming from the opposite side, but it's coming like underhand almost, right? It's just such a funky low slot. Like, and then if you think about like the banana peel concept where your pitches are all supposed to like kind of look the same, come out of the hand and go different directions. Imagine the banana peel, but now the banana peel's coming from different arm slots. Like, that's the way to make the banana peels even more tricky is like,
it's Thompson.
You just can't get used to it. Like, I wonder.
Yeah, Anderson.
So what I wonder is, I wonder if the Rays have put together a bullpen that is harder to adjust to than some of the bullpens we've seen from the Dodgers. I don't think Dave Roberts is a bad manager.
I got a name for you. Imagine facing Blake Treinen after Bruzdahl Gratterall. You look at Blake Treinen by himself, you're like, oh my God, 98 was sink. If you look at Bruzdahl Gratterall by himself, you're like, oh my God, 100 with sink and fate. You know, you put them right in front of each other. If you've been timing up Bruzdahl Gratterall, maybe Treinen is like, oh, that's easier.
Right. You need someone to throw poo out there, like, like low arm slot,
80 poo frisbees from underneath.
Yeah, you need frisbees or something in between. Like,
you're right.
And there's actually a analytical standpoint for this too. There's called the knuckleball hangover. This has actually been shown. There, it's a true thing that after a knuckleballer pitches, the people after him perform better than you expect.
Yes, Buck Showalter used to always talk about that. I'm glad there's an actual stat. Sometimes I think he's
insane. I think that actually kind of, I'm going to shoehorn that into what you're talking about, Derek. You know, it's like, yeah, if you just saw from underneath, it might, you know, if you just saw 88 with Super Sync from underneath and then Nick Anderson comes and is throwing you 98 at your nipples, like, maybe that's really hard to like adjust to. Whereas if everybody was just like, we've got this thing going on, like,
right,
we're all at the top of the zone, we all have ride, you know, right, you might at the end of it just be like, oh, I got this now.
Well, don't you guys ever go to the batting cages? Because my husband and I do, and there's the softballs and there's baseball. And if I go from, I mean, a very low level example here, but if I go from the fast baseball cage, it gets up to like 75-80, by the way, and I hit it, mm-hmm, and then I go to the softball one, it takes me an entire, like, it's 15, you put a token in, it's 15 pitches, that whole next one, I'm total shit. Like, I can't hit the softball at all, it's coming in at a different
arc.
And
did you play softball?
I did, and I have no time.
So that should
no
be
field.
Like, that should almost be like riding a bike or something.
Right, yeah? So it's equivalent to like a regular pitcher, right? They should be able to quickly adjust, and they can't. Because I think it's that recent muscle memory. I think it's like the muscle fibers. You've been practicing this for that short span, that it's what's on your mind, what you're focused on. And now you can't go back to that old, you need a little adjustment period.
It's part of the third time through the order thing, right?
Yeah.
This is like the third time you see the guy is after you deposited, you know, the $5 and you went through the whole thing.
Yep.
The third time through the order is the next $5 or whatever, you know,
totally.
It's like, oh, now I'm ready. You know? So, yeah, I think this is definitely a thing. I don't know that the Dodgers are necessarily bad at it, or they just didn't get it together to get those types of players this year. But we now have the Orioles bullpen and the Rays bullpen as guides. Actually, I think probably even the A's have tried this. You know, you got Yusmeyr Petit, you got Diekman, you got really different arm slots. I think variants of arm slots and speeds is probably a good thing to achieve from your bullpen. So now you're making me question my pick.
Well, the Brewers are doing it too, though, because they had Oliver Drake actually before
and
the
Claudio.
Claudio's
the best.
And yes. Eric Yardley.
He throws like 67.
Yeah, he's slinging some poo up there. Like, it's ridiculous. So you watch him, Brent Suter, that's funky as hell and it works. Like, those guys all have different looks aside from the fact that there's a big change in velo and a big change in pitches. Hader, obviously his own thing. Freddy Peralta hides the ball really well behind his head coming from the right side. People don't like
almost like a
looks.
Righty hater in a way.
Yeah,
I think he could be a really good one inning guy.
So I think some of these teams are really on to something with the varying parts. Like, yeah, you want your relievers to have a few common traits, but you also want them to be generally kind of different looks that you can mix and match to really just keep hitters completely uncomfortable.
Hey, whatever we can do to keep submariners alive. And knuckleballers. Hey, why don't you get a knuckleball in that pen, dudes?
Yeah, those are great, great thinkers, great quotes. Keep them alive.
Is it too late for me to learn how to throw a knuckleball and do something with my life?
No. Well, I don't know about the second part of that.
Yeah.
Learn a knuckleball, maybe.
Wait, what is this podcast to you? Nothing?
Well, to me, it's a lot. It's everything to me, but to
no, I didn't.
To my family, they're like, "What are you doing here?" Like, what? We thought you were going to be a doctor when you were young.
My dad even likes baseball, dude. I don't even think he listens to this. My mom, who doesn't like baseball, does. So there's my family in a nutshell.
Yeah, I hope your mom's doing well. She always asks how I'm doing because you don't on most episodes, which is really nice of her.
Mom, if you stuck all the way through this, I love you. I don't know this is amazing that you're here right now. Everybody go visit the Ghost City Inn in Jerome, Arizona.
Nice.
You won't see my mom because it's contactless at this point, but
she's there.
But she's there.
She's
like a ghost.
She's omnipresent.
Just like a ghost.
I'm interested to see how Derek's going to segue out of this show now.
Yeah. Wait, so we have our picks. We have our picks, right? What are our picks? Let's review the picks real quick.
Dodgers in six.
Oh, we are all Dodgers?
Yep.
Yeah. Do it, Eno, do it.
Oh, man. We are screwed.
I know.
No.
Yeah. I'm going Dodgers, but I'm going seven. I think it'll be a good one.
All right. Well, I mean, I'd love to see seven. I actually would love to see the Braves win. I'd love to see the Rays win, but I just, you know, I think it's going to be Astros-Dodgers. I think we're getting a rematch.
You think it's going to be Astros-Dodgers? God. See, speaking of an asteroid.
Come on. It wouldn't be that bad.
No, you're right. TBS would love it.
They would. They really
would. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I think the media would love that. Just a rematch? Oh, boy. A
lot of threads to pull there. So I will say, if my dad is listening to the show for the first time at episode 153, thanks for jumping on board, Dad. Yeah. Let's go play golf on Friday. If you are not my dad and you're enjoying the show on a platform that allows you to rate and review the podcast, please take a moment to do that. We really appreciate it. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, $1 a month at theathletic.com/ratesinbarrels. All the stuff we do is there on Twitter. She's at Britt_Giroli. He's at Unoceris. I'm at Derek Van Riper. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Tuesday.
Oh my God. Thanks for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.